Before we start today's show, we wanted to let you know that world-class host and former U.S. ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul, has a new book out called From Cold War to Hot Peace, An American Ambassador in Putin's Russia. In his book, McFaul offers a revelatory inside account of U.S.-Russia relations from 1989 to the present. You can pre-order on Amazon, and it will be published on May 8th. Again, the book is called From Cold War to Hot Peace.
You are listening to World Class from the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford University. We bring expertise on international affairs from Stanford's campus straight to you. My name is Francis Fukuyama. I'm the Olivier Nomolini Senior Fellow at FSI and the Mosbacher Director of the Center on Democracy, Development, and the Rule of Law. Today on the show, I have the great privilege of hosting President Ma Ying-jeou, who served as President of Taiwan from 2008 to 2016. He is brought to Stanford by FSI and also by the Hoover Institution, and we're very grateful for this cooperation. President Ma and I are going to be talking about the challenges to democracy on Taiwan and around the region. President Ma, thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Professor Fukuyama, for your invitation.
I should say I met with President Ma about a year ago when I was in Taipei and extended this invitation. It's taken a little while, but I'm really glad that you're able to join us today. Mm-hmm. So let's begin with the big elephant in the room, which is the People's Republic of China. It's been growing. It's been extending its influence. There are a lot of important internal developments in China. Since you know China very well, perhaps you could give us your view on those developments and how you see China's future trajectory.
Mm-hmm. You're quite right to point out that mainland China is developing very fast, and they will be the largest economic entity in a few years. But if you use the PPP, the purchasing power parity, I think mainland China is already the largest economy. So I'm sure their leaders are pretty confident that their way of development is superior than that of the West. And so that is why they think they will do better. But of course, it's up to the rest of the world to judge whether it's true or not. And I think for my country, Republic of China and Taiwan, well, certainly the pressure is great, and we understand that we have to cope with the situation very carefully in order to get ahead. So we have quite a few challenges for mainland China, not just military, but also economic and other things. So we need to use our wisdom to cooperate with other actors in the area, Japan, United States, Southeast Asia, in order to make our encounter with mainland China is a peaceful and fruitful one.
So Xi Jinping, with whom you've met directly, has emerged as the preeminent leader in China. Recently, the National People's Congress just voted to eliminate term limits to his presidency. So unlike previous presidents, he can stay beyond the 10 years that has been the tradition ever since 1978. How do you see, you know, these developments? I mean, is he going to be around for a very long time, and how do we deal with him?
Mm-hmm. Well, even as early as a couple of years ago, people in Taiwan and from the mainland talk about the possibility of his third term. And he's very confident and ambitious. He hopes to accomplish what he said, the 2021. The centennial of Communist Party, and 2049, the centennial of the domain in China as a country. So he certainly believed that his people support what he has accomplished in mainland China, the anti-corruption endeavors and the emphasis on infrastructure, and like the high-speed rail, and other things. And so he believes that unless he has enough time to do this, Otherwise, you won't be able to accomplish all this. But obviously, the reaction from the rest of the world is very different. For those of us in Taiwan, we are actually not very much surprised of the development. But of course, we are also somewhat disappointed because we think unless the mainland goes democratic to some extent, that the future reunification between Taiwan and mainland China will not be very smooth.
Mm-hmm.
People in Taiwan have been used to a democratic form of government or society, and so that probably has to wait until mainland China do more in this regard,
mm-hmm.
in order to make the kind of cooperation meeting the needs of Taiwan,
mm-hmm.
Meeting the aspirations of Taiwanese people. Yeah.
Well, since the 1980s, Taiwan has been a full, I think, and successful democracy with
mm-hmm.
all of the constitutional checks and balances that we
right.
Expect in a modern democracy. And so I think Taiwan continues to be a kind of beacon for that type of government in Asia. So I think it's very important for all of us to remember that. Perhaps we could broaden the frame to the geopolitics of the region in general. So obviously, China's rise is one of the big drivers, but there are other flashpoints, and in particular, a lot has happened over the Korean Peninsula with the upcoming meeting between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. Could you say a little bit about your view of the geopolitics of Asia and particularly Taiwan's position in it?
Well, first of all, in order to answer your question, we have to identify the flashpoints in East Asia. The Korean Peninsula, of course, is one. And East China Sea, okay, South China Sea, and the Taiwan Strait. All these have potential problems of becoming a place of tension in the world. So have to be managed very carefully. But obviously, the development in Korean Peninsula seems to be better than we expect, hope, by the time when the leaders of North Korea and the United States met. The situation will be even more peaceful. But again, the East China Sea, the conflict between mainland China and Japan on the Diaoyutai Island and so on, I think by and large, they have found sort of a modus vivendi to deal with that issue. On the one hand, the fishery part has already been solved between Taiwan and Japan back in 2013. The sovereignty issue probably is a formidable one. It takes time. And for South China Sea, mainland China, of course, continue their very strong attitude in the present over there. But at the moment, they seem to have stopped the land reclamation. And the U.S. continue to send ships to patrol over there. So there are problems, but I don't think there will be a crisis of some sort. Cross-strait relations has encountered difficulties because the current government in Taiwan refused to recognize the 92 consensus, which the mainland China consider as a very important element of mutual trust and mutual cooperation. So I think it's very important for the leaders of Taiwan to think again about the benefit and costs of making that recognition. So actually, judging from what I did from 2008 to 2016, the 92 consensus really helped us, not only to improve relations with the mainland, but using that, we also expand our international relations. This, for instance, the former Deputy Assistant Secretary for East Asian Affairs, Susan Thornton, put it very clearly, said, "The relations between Taiwan and the U.S. was the best ever because Taiwan effectively and managed the relation between the two sides." So this is a very important key, not only to cross-strait relations, but also to multilateral relations in this part of the world.
Maybe you could say something about your perception of the United States in this entire relationship. Obviously, that 92 consensus has been part of American foreign policy Are you confident that the United States will continue to support Taiwan? I mean, the U.S. Congress just voted overwhelmingly recently to increase the number of visits, you know, mm-hmm. by Americans mm-hmm. to Taiwan. So that's one expression of that relationship. How do you feel about the future direction of Washington?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, Congress just passed the Taiwan Travel Act, allowing leaders of Taiwan and leaders of the U.S. to meet in the United States. Which actually, during my administration, we have done some of those, but there are still some restrictions. Certainly, we are glad these restrictions will be removed. But on the other hand, people in Taiwan also are worried that this might be used by the United States as a bargaining chip against mainland China in the trade talks on other things. So I think they probably have to use that very carefully. And the mainland China was furious about the Taiwan Travel Act. They consider that a violation of the One China principle, which is the basis of relations between mainland China and the United States. So there are problems, so we have to be very careful.
Are you worried that a trade war is going to escalate between the U.S. and China at this point?
Well, they will be developing for a while, but I don't think there will be a disaster mm-hmm. kind of things, because it is in the mutual interest of two sides to negotiate a settlement.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you're right. And I think there's been some recent evidence that both sides are pulling back from their initial threats. So let's move on to the question of democracy inside mm-hmm. Taiwan. Mm-hmm. So from the outside, it looks like a very strong democracy. There's been an alternation in power between the different parties. But I think when you look closer up, there are a lot of tensions there. How do you see your own society's institutions faring right now?
Well, I think our democracy has been developing for quite a while, and at least it has become part of our culture. People are used to it and use that as a point of pride. But on the other hand, we do see problems in the last 2 years, ever since the transfer of power. The ruling, the DPP, actually passed a few laws that actually are intended in a way to liquidate mm-hmm. the KMT, mm-hmm. particularly their party's assets.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably will pose a lot of problems, because all these acts, all these laws, is based on the concept of presumption of guilt, not mm-hmm. presumption of innocence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been focused on just a single party. That could be a problem of for the future, and the problem for the continued polarization in politics in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I think we have to pay a lot of attention to. Certainly, we hope the ruling party will take very careful consideration of the laws mm-hmm. that actually violate our constitution, particularly the presumption of guilt instead of innocence. And this could cause problems in the future.
I think that both the United States and Taiwan share a problem with polarization that has gotten more extreme as time has gone on. Do you see ways of overcoming this polarization? I mean, there are certainly things from you just said that the DPP, the ruling party right now, can pull back on some things. How about on your side? Are there ways that we can, you know, I mean, two sides can work together better?
Well, I think for those sort of enlightened politicians, they all see the need for cooperation or reconciliation. But once you come to the actual politics, it's very difficult for them to stop doing things that would accelerate polarization. So particularly on those two mm-hmm. Enactments I just mentioned, they have to be used very carefully. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, our democracy will be hurt as mm-hmm. a result. Yeah.
I'm about to publish in a couple of months a book on identity and identity politics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been for me, a very fascinating aspect of Taiwan, is that the identity of Taiwan has become more and more contested. What's your view of this? I mean, what is Taiwan's identity right now?
Well, before we start the democratization process, a lot of people support Taiwan's independence and even separation from China, from even the Republic of China. But after so many years of democratization, the need to do that seems to be reduced, because through the just regular elections, whatever political party could put into practice what they preach. But on the other hand, still people think that maybe a separate Taiwan is better in the Taiwan's interest. But ever since about a couple of years ago, mainland China has adopted a rather aggressive attitude to give benefits or rights to people of Taiwan if they go to mainland China, because they can afford to do that now, mm-hmm. given their national wealth. That have changed mm-hmm. Quietly mm-hmm. the people's mind in terms of identification.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the recent opinion poll shows that the people who support independence, become less.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who support unification become slightly more. Mm-hmm. Although this cannot be called a trend now, but it could be further developed in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not something in the past that when everything in the mainland is poor or backward. But now they have a lot of things that Taiwan doesn't even have.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, face identification in terms mm-hmm. of day-to-day trade.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't use cash anymore in some places.
Mm-hmm.
They use their smartphone, they can do mm-hmm. that. So all this gave people in Taiwan quite a shock,
mm-hmm.
Because the mainland has they are so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a few provinces, mainland China, now has their total GDP higher mm-hmm. than those of Taiwan.
Yeah.
Although per capita-wise, they are still less. But in terms of the total GDP. This is something that pose a challenge to people in Taiwan, not just psychologically, but also in terms of actual life.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in the next couple of years, things will further develop to see that Taiwan's future and mainland China's future, whether unification or independence. Obviously, independence increasingly become not a good option
mm-hmm.
because no country will recognize us. And what they want as a result of independence has already been achieved or accomplished mm-hmm. in the democratization process.
Mm-hmm.
So the next question is, what should we do with mainland China? Either maintaining the status quo or engage the mainland in unification talks. So in the next 5 or 10 years, this issue will be dealt with in a very serious way. But in my view, we have to maintain some flexibility mm-hmm. in the choices. I think the best way for us to do is to maintain the maintenance of the status quo. We still have our freedom, our independence, whatever. But in case the conditions for unification are suitable enough for Taiwan, maybe Taiwan could consider doing that. But this will be a very important position choice and has to be very, very careful.
That's really fascinating that you bring up that possibility. So what kinds of signals would you have to get before you thought it was safe to actually engage China in talk about reunification?
Well, first of all, I think we need more and closer in-depth contact between the two sides so that they will understand each other more. But at the moment, I do not believe that time is ripe yet.
Mm-hmm.
We need more time. And particularly when mainland China is developing so fast, and we have to make sure that the people from two sides would really understand each other. And the mainland has also adopted, as I said, very aggressive policy to attract more people from Taiwan
mm-hmm.
to mainland China. That will take some time before these people will really understand the mm-hmm. two sides in a way that will give them enough reason to go even further. So, by and large, I think it's very important for people in Taiwan to think about what's going to do mm-hmm. for the future,
mm-hmm.
which option is better for Taiwan's long-term future,
yeah.
and has to be seriously considered that.
No, that brain drain problem, as I understand, is really quite severe. So the last issue I wanted to raise with you, it's related to things you've just said. You know, the thing that struck me on my visit, I had not been to Taiwan in maybe 5-6 years when I was there last year. In 2017. And if you go to China, if you go to Shenzhen or Shanghai or any of these big Chinese cities, every time you go, there's something new. You know, there's a new ring road, or there's all these new skyscrapers. And Taipei's skyline is pretty much
The same.
The same as it was 10 years ago. And I think that reflects the low rate of economic growth that Taiwan has experienced, which for all sorts of reasons is not a good thing for Taiwan. And so what's the cause of that, and what is it that Taiwanese leaders can do to increase Taiwan's growth rate?
I think you really put your finger on the question. I think two things, trade and investment. In the case of trade, we are very much handicapped by the number of FTAs, free trade agreements we have with our trading partners. And that has to be changed. Before I became president, we only have FTAs with five Latin American countries. And the percentage of their total trade with Taiwan is less than 1% of our total trade. So for our export goods, very few of them were covered under the FTA. Well, during my presidency, I signed FTA with mainland China, with New Zealand, with Singapore, that effectively make the percentage being covered by FTA jump from less than 1% to almost 10%. But it is still far less in terms of number of FTA compared to our competitors like Japan, South Korea, Hong Kong, and Singapore. So that has to be some kind of breakthrough before we can have a competitive advantage. Secondly, is investment. So foreign or domestic investment in the last 10 years has been growing very slow. And I think one reason is we do have some local problem, like our electricity, water, and labor and talent. So I will talk about that this afternoon and how we should deal with these problems. And actually, many of our neighbor countries have already conquered this quite a problem, like Japan, because we are still very much fixed on the concept of no nuke, no nuclear power. But that seems to be something not very helpful to our economy. So that has to be changed.
You canceled a really large nuclear project recently, is that
That's
correct?
Right. Yeah. Actually, that one has been accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
So the nuclear power plant number four has been mothballed 3 years ago.
After substantial investment.
That's really a shame if we do that. But now we are building a sort of a coal-based power plants. I think this is not really a good policy, not only in terms of climate change, but also it's become a waste of money. So you have a already made nuclear power plant and just scrap it. And this is really not a very smart policy. And that would seriously affect our economic development.
Well, President Ma, these are all fascinating issues. I'm really looking forward to your speech this afternoon at Stanford University at the Hoover Institution. So thank you very much for joining me on this podcast. You've been listening to World Class from the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford University. Follow us on Twitter at FSI Stanford or visit our website at fsi.stanford.edu for more events and expertise from the world of international studies. My name is Francis Fukuyama. Thank you for listening.